ready for the interview. And if you get a cue live on a laptop, watch what I'm gonna do. Welcome to the show, let them know we got a point of view. Hey, yo, let's have a combo. Say what you feel, be real, that's the motto. Real talk, pronto, Dr. D, PhD, hit an intro. Hold up, wait, gotta be social. Network global, a home for the locals. Gotta be social, network global, a home for the locals.
All right, Nicole, you're back. And the amazing distinction of coming back again on the podcast, I sometimes do things, a few episodes with people back to back. Not often, though. So you're in the club, you know?
Oh, I feel so like got in, you know, like I'm a big SpongeBob fan. This is a very like weird niche thing about me. There's a Club SpongeBob episode, and I feel like I'm part of Club SpongeBob now. So thank you.
You're part of something. I mean, what's going on here? Well, I just had a good time, and I'm a big fan of telling people how I feel about them and how things went. And I just feel like I had a really good time, and I felt like, man, this is over. There's more to talk about, you know, so let's keep it rolling, you know?
It flew. I'm excited to be back. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Well, you know, last time we didn't really talk about kind of imperfect success, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, I got to get to this and talk a little bit about kind of the origins of that. So I wanted to start with that. And then, you know, this is just going to percolate and go towards wherever it's going to go, you know.
Sounds good. Well, I'll go ahead and like give I'll call it the Reader's Digest version of the origin story.
All right.
And that is, I grew up in a family that was very, very heavily immersed in the personal development world. Like both my parents worked for Tony Robbins, among other people, for like 30 plus years. And it was awesome. I got to, you know, attend the seminars. I listened to the audio tapes. So I very much grew up in the scope, the language of how can we be better every single day. Now, I do always like to put a little like asterisk here and just say this was the personal development world of like the 80s and 90s. So I do think that looks very different from the personal development world today, which I'm grateful for in many ways. So I definitely had that like high achiever kind of embedded into me, but I don't love using the word victim, but I'm going to use it here for lack of a better one, which is I was the victim of very severe childhood bullying, and it got to the point where, you know, me, this like very excited to be alive child, was very much shut down. I stopped, like, I've talked to my parents numerous times about it and just said like, wow, I don't feel like I have very many childhood memories where I remember feeling happy, where I remember playing big. I was very quiet. I was very, you know, small. I just played very small. And it wasn't until, that was really where perfectionism like sunk its claws in me, you know?
Yeah.
And as a result, I started going into, you know, more like musical theater. And that was kind of my way of releasing. That was my way of like being loud, being big, but it was always masked behind a character, right? And so that high achiever in me still lived. And she was like, okay, we're going to, you know, go be on Broadway. We're going to move to New York. We're going to go to the best musical theater college in America, and it's going to be great. And I did get into one of the best in America, and I'm very, very grateful for that education. But it got to the point where I was so anxious. I was getting like, you know, I'd say every other day, sometimes even daily panic attacks. I was so just unhappy. I was just really unhappy. I was drinking myself to blackout every weekend just to numb whatever feelings I was having. And as a result, you know, alcohol, lack of sleep, and panic attacks don't really do well on The Voice as a musical theater major. So I was plummeting in my levels. I was plummeting in my performance. And my teacher finally sat me down and he was like, you're not going to graduate. Like, you're going to either have to leave or pull off a miracle. And I called my dad and I was like, I need coaching now. Like, my dream's on the line. I need to figure something out. And he coached me for, I want to say like on and off for about a year and a half. And long story short, I graduated. But what was more important is I learned how to adapt those teachings from childhood and implement them, actually, because I wasn't doing that before. And then finally changed it to, what does this, and this has been the process of the last like 8 years, it feels like, What does it look like to adapt that personal development, high achiever self to a recovering perfectionist like I am? So that's been the big thesis question over the past formally 5 years, but really eight to 10 years since college. So that's my little origin story.
That's the origin story. Everyone has an origin story.
Everyone does.
A superhero origin story, but it's definitely an origin story. You know, I hung on something. I like to go backwards sometimes.
Perfect.
And it's good to go backwards. And I hung on to the previous like 80s, 90s self or personal development versus today. What's the difference? And you said for the better. Tell me a little bit more about that.
I think the personal development of the 80s and 90s was very, if you're not happy, change it. If you're not happy, hustle. If you're not happy, be happy in the moment, like change your state in a given moment. And I think that that's still apparent for the most part, but now I feel like we've added this whole other layer of self-care, self-compassion, not slowing down in the way of like, let me, you know, lower my expectations on myself, but slowing down in the way of how can you live your life now, not when you achieve this certain level. And that to me is the game changer right there, because a lot of the personal development of the 80s and 90s, I feel like was always forward momentum. It was always like, what's my next goal? What's my next goal? What's my next level I need to hit? And I think that that was good. I think that there's good that comes from that, you know, striving for more, like always having a vision, having a goal that you're setting your eyes on. But if you're always looking at that's going to be what makes me happy, and then you achieve it and you're happy for maybe 6 minutes, and then it's actually the next one and so on and so forth. Learning how to develop that now is the big difference that I've seen. But I'm curious, do you notice a difference between like that kind of old world personal development versus now?
Yeah, I would say so. I want to talk about that. I'm on a stream of consciousness here, Nicole.
You're good.
Because we didn't talk about the whole Tony Robbins thing last time. And I was like, I have several things I need to get back into about this. So to answer your question, yeah, I do think personal development, personality development, self-care. We're in an interesting state because this is the hot take thing. We're always doing takes here. I think that the take is we're trying to fit people in these categories, right? It's like, hey, this your development is based off of this category, and you're this on an Enneagram, or you're this on the DISC assessment, or whatever it may be. And that's just people are more complicated than the category that they're placed in. For that, you vacillate between feeling great, feeling open-minded, feeling closed-minded, feeling agreeable, non-agreeable to things. It's a spectrum. Most things are a spectrum. Yeah. So I feel like humans don't like spectrums because they're not definitive mechanisms, right? It's like, well, just tell me what I am. Diagnose me. This is what I am. But maybe it's just more complex than that. So
I think that personal development is a little bit different,
you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think that goes to our desperate need for certainty, right?
Yes.
Our brain is always searching for certainty because it knows in certainty, hooray, I'll survive. And that's kind of our brain's, you know, core function is how do I keep myself surviving today? And I feel like we cling to these things like Enneagram. I know people who make Enneagram, their Enneagram number, their entire personality, so because strange. They're able to sink their claws and feel a level of control, a level of, like I keep saying, certainty in, oh, well, that's just because of my Enneagram. Now, I do think that things like Enneagram, DISC, Myers-Briggs, those are good to understand like your motivation or maybe some of your kryptonites, stuff like that. But if you let that be the excuse for not taking ownership over something you want to change, that's where I see it going really south. And I see people just keep themselves in a box because, oh, I'm an Enneagram 4, so da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah. And I think that's what I see happening is a lot of that is you start defining yourself by this number or everything. So, you know, in a larger sense, this personal development is almost like personal identification of a number, of a type of thing that I see. And going backwards, I wonder how this like the whole Tony Robbins things, I think is very fascinating. I watched probably like a lot of people on Netflix, the special, I think it was like, I Am Not Your Guru whole thing.
Yep.
And I thought that was very fascinating, but please take us inside that with the family who's been like up and close personal for a long time. Yeah.
I want to first and foremost say that the very few interactions that I've had with him, I want to be very clear. It's not like we're like calling each other up buds or anything like that, but here's a good example. When I was 18, we'd been out of like going to every single seminar for a while now. My dad moved from being a ropes course leader to being one of his master life coaches. And so we hadn't been doing as many seminars, but we were able to go to a seminar when I was right before going into college. And they were very awesome. They got us really great tickets and everything like that. So we went to the Unleash the Power Within, which is, I love that 4 days. It is a really, really amazing experience. And we like kind of worked our way up to the front during one of the dance parties, because it's literally a concert for 4 days. Like it is high energy. And Tony points to my dad in the audience and he says, "Oh my God, Bill." And he like points to me, he goes, "Is that Nicole?" And I was like, "How the literal motherfuck do you remember my name?" And that was just a very genuine moment of like, oh wow, like that's someone who really does take care to consider people. I love listening to his stuff. I love attending his seminars and everything like that. And I love going into it with constantly reminding myself, take what works, leave what doesn't. And he even says it at the beginning. And I really appreciate that. I do think some people watch his stuff and see the intensity. And because he does talk very black and white, which I think for perfectionists can be a really slippery slope, and a recovering one like myself. But I always remind myself, like, take what works, leave what doesn't. Sleeping 4 hours a night, not my MO. I'm an 8 hour a night minimum person. I don't have kids yet, so put that in mind. But like, I don't function off of any less than that. And I think that there's some things that he kind of declares as law that I don't think are necessary good for everyone. But the mindset, the beliefs, exercises, all of those changes, I think that everyone could withstand listening and absorbing those tools and techniques, because he's the top in this industry for a reason, in that way.
How do you, maybe not you, but just in general, the general you, separate like that whole concept of take what works and, you know, basically shoot off. It's kind of like metabolism. You take the energy you need and the rest is waste type of thing. But, you know, and the whole concept of a guru, and I love that special actually, is like, how do people not go into that mindset of like, okay, this is my guru, and this becomes all about Tony and not about a principle and ideas, and get wrapped up into the fandom and all that stuff?
I'm going to speak candidly. Tony himself is very against that, from what I've seen. I'm obviously not in his head. There are some people on his team that godify him, and I strongly dislike that, to the point where if I'm at a seminar and there's certain people on the stage, I personally do not feel like I can look through neutral enough colored glasses to be able to take what they're actually saying. And I sometimes use that as my bathroom break, or use that as time to go get some lunch. And I say that because I don't want to put him, and I'm going to speak from my personal experience, I don't want to put him on this insanely godlike pedestal. My entire life leading up until I was, I want to say 21, 22, I was constantly asking myself, well, what would Tony Robbins do in this scenario? And that was putting this astronomical expectation on myself. He has an entire team. He has like 50 some odd companies. I don't have that. I don't have those resources, and that's okay. But comparing my output to his, like my conceptualized output of what he can do in a day was really, really harmful. So I've switched that up, in my opinion. I've totally forgotten your two questions in your head, and I forgot one of them. Do you mind repeating it?
Yeah, no, it was mainly about like, how can someone, well, let me backtrack a little bit and maybe give some more frame for this picture here.
Yeah.
I think is that we're in a time where I think because of all the resources we have, whether it's Netflix, Hulu, YouTube, social media, the many people have become, are elevating themselves to a quote unquote guru status. And they, people end up becoming kind of this flock of this person's ideology. And then they start forgetting who they are within it and just, hey, there's good principles here, but how can a person be in something but also be critical and say, hey, this maybe is not a great part of this versus this blind allegiance that I'm sure happens with Tony Robbins and people, because I think this is part of critical thinking. How can you become better at deciphering like, hey, am I going too far in this? That I can't see the critical flaws in this, you know?
I think the biggest thing, I'm going to speak from someone who is a leader of sorts. The second I make it about my ego, about making sure I seem like the best, most important, most smartest person in the room, I'm doing something fucking wrong.
Yeah.
Because it's not about me. I'm the vessel. I'm the person who's spewing this information or tailoring things to them. But in no way do I have all the answers. In no way do I have like this like godlike ability. I make it about them. What is the thing that they need to hear today? What is something that one person is struggling that I can help them overcome today? It's all about the mission rather than my own egotistical nonsense. And I don't know about you. I've got a really good bullshit meter. Like
mm-hmm. Me too.
To the point where, yeah, I figured yeah, you were in that same,
real high.
Same boat.
Like really high.
But like, I can tell instantly when someone is doing it so that they can, doing it meaning creating content, meaning being a YouTube person, like, you know, that kind of general thing is like, I can tell the second someone's doing that for their own egotistical output, their own egotistical outcome, excuse me, versus them actually giving a damn about the people who are listening.
Yeah.
And I have no effing interest in being around people who are just trying to like, so like I mentioned, I went to a musical theater school, and this might be a little vulgar for the show, so I apologize. But one of my acting coaches, he was talking about how whenever you're in a scene, it is all about the person you're in a scene with. It's all about connecting with them and making sure you're present with them. The second you are just there to be the funny one or to be the one that ever steals the stage, he hated that phrase, steal the light. That's it. The second you're doing that, you're masturbating on stage.
Yeah.
And it's like, I have no interest in being surrounded by any more people who are masturbating on fucking stages anymore. Like, I went to musical theater school. I surrounded myself with a lot of them for a while.
Yeah.
And it was fucking ridiculous. But that's the thing is like, the second you make it about yourself, you're masturbating. The second you make it about them, you're in a relationship with that person. And that's the difference.
I feel like the bullshit's really high though right now. Like, it's just like,
yeah,
it's like really high. You know, it's like, I know the things, but here's the thing. I know the things that I could do to make my podcast extremely big if I wanted to. I know that. I know I could say a lot of crazy shit, lie completely about stuff, take my shirt off, run up a hill, film myself doing crazy workouts. I know that, but it's just like, it just doesn't feel right to me. And I think we've crossed this line where like, well, if it's whether it's right or it's true or not, doesn't matter. It's, does this give me clicks? And that's a slippery slope, you know?
I follow two fitness influencers, I'll say, on social media. And oh my gosh, Soli is her name, and Ben Carpenter is his name. I can't remember her. I think it's Soli Fit. And they make videos that are making fun of all the influencers who are like, these are gonna kill you. These have toxins. Like, and they're like, but everything has chemicals. Like, and they're just, they're so funny because it's like, it's just calling to attention the clickbaitiness of the day and age. Now, I think that there's a huge surge of this, like you're saying, for a reason. And I think that, you know, if I have a video that has 2.5 million downloads, my brain is literally built to feel more important, more good about myself. That rush of dopamine is going to kick in and yada, yada, yada. And if I have a video that has two views, I'm now programmed to feel like shit about that. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that when people realize that if I say these ridiculous things that are definitely not true, or at best stretching of the truth, I get more views, which means I'm more important, which means I'm further ahead. And it's become this like race to nowhere, because view counts, in my personal opinion, yes, view counts are important for, you know, we're in the industry of like, I'm not going to sit at this mic and say follower numbers don't count or whatever.
Yeah.
We've made them count. Let's take ownership. We've made them fucking count. But should they mean anything about your self-worth? Fuck no, please no. Same with view counts, same with like counts, whatever it is. But we've equated so much of those numbers to mean success. And there's just such, I'm curious what you think of this. Why do you think there is such a drive to be successful? I don't think it's right now, because I think it's always been that way. But why do you think it's been so put under a microscope?
The drive to be successful, like,
yeah,
like in what sense? Like, just through
like that egotistical, like, let me be better than everyone else in the room.
That's a good question. I think, I think there's more opportunity to have a voice. I think celebrityism has spread amongst, I mean, this sounds bad to say, just general people,
yeah,
your everyday working people believe that they can be a celebrity in their own mind. So it's like, okay, I have this microphone, I have this camera, and if I do some really wild shit, maybe it will lead to me being like amazing and people will love me, and then I'll become more relevant than I am now. But it still doesn't make you great. I mean, it doesn't mean you're great. It just means that a bunch of people find what you're doing is just, maybe they don't even like it. They just want to see the car crash. You know, it's like, it's not like you have to like the content you're into. You just could be watching it because you just find it ridiculous. And you may even have a philosophical problem with it, but you keep watching it, which means you're contributing to it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, this is what's interesting. Like, that's interesting to me, is the contribution is something you don't like. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's how I feel like with, you know, Facebook and like political fights on there and stuff like that. I'm like, I desperately wish that trend to die, like die a painful death. Like, I can't stand it. But I feel like, you know, I love my parents so much, but my mom, she gets really anxious really easily. I take after her in that way. And she'll scroll through the news and scroll through Facebook and see everyone's like, it's like you say, it's a car crash. Like, you can't not look away. And during like election times, I'm like, I already don't watch the news. I get a lot of flack for that, and fucking, I don't care. Like, I just don't care. Yeah. I don't watch the news. Yeah. I am so much happier when I'm not absorbing that. I don't get on Facebook very often. And if I do, I don't read that stuff, because it's just like, why would I contribute to this? Because it's not affecting anyone but me. I'm not changing anyone's mind.
You're definitely not changing anyone's mind. I'm not changing anyone's mind. You're just contributing to the clicks and the views for that. And I don't even have social media. All I have is LinkedIn. That's all I have.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows this about me and my podcast. And they go, well, why don't you have that? Your podcast will be bigger. I'm like, yeah, but you have to take a stand for things that you believe in and that you feel like, because a lot of people, I mean, over 600 plus interviews, and I was saying 90% of the people go, I hate social media, but I feel like I have to use it. I'm like, but like, okay, you're doing something you hate. All right. Normally you would never direct someone to do that unless they literally had no other source of some, they had to like scrape Like, you don't need that. But no. There's this disconnect. And I just find it funny that, like, we're contributing to the thing we dislike. What does that say about us as people? I'm trying to get down to this, Nicole. I'm really trying to figure this out.
That's an interesting question.
Right? Why do we do this? Please tell me.
I have an idea. And that is, you know, if we go way, 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 way back to the times we were living in tribes, living in caves, like, if you were ostracized from the group, you were dead.
Yeah.
You couldn't survive just you. And while we've obviously adapted so much in technology and, you know, we think we're so smart and everything, we're still those brains at our core. So I think it's just become this like completely socially acceptable form of slow torture that we're all just, and I say that as someone who has social media, like I'm totally contributing to this, but like, I think we've just become this, you know, we don't want to be the person who has that, like, oh, I'm missing out, or, oh, I'm, you know, not a part of it. And I will say this, because something I've done recently, because I have an Instagram for my account, for my business, and, you know, I'll post on there and stuff like that. But something I stopped doing is like feeling like I need to show up and be Nicole, the business owner. Mm-hmm. I've really let that go because in my opinion, every time I showed up on Instagram as that person, I was immediately drained of all joy and creativity. So I've started showing up as just like, here's Nicole, the absolute weirdo who actually happens to own a business. Like I mentioned at the top of this episode, I'm a SpongeBob fan. I also read fantasy novels. I also take 2 o'clock in the afternoon off on a Wednesday and I go lay out by the pool. Like, you know, I was tired of showing up as someone who I wasn't. And as a result, my algorithm started changing. It wasn't showing me like, you know, trends or things in my niche anymore. It's now showing me funny videos about the novels I'm reading or funny videos about being married. I just got married back in June, like I said on our last episode. Like, so, and I've started enjoying it so much more because I'm just like, oh, this is funny. This is good. I don't feel like I need to like be promoting on here. I'm just enjoying watching something that's silly and weird. And I know that that's kind of like killing one bee and ending up with a hive in the result because, you know, you're just getting sucked into the algorithm that's created to keep you on the app. But I almost don't care because I notice that I'm so much happier in results to the app now than I was when I felt like I had to show up a quote unquote certain way.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying. I really do. And I want
to disagree.
I know it's not even that. It's just like what are we being ostracized from at this point? Like, it's not like we're in a tribe and it's like, wow, you're going to stuck outside the cave. Fuck you. You know, you're done. Like, you know, it's like, it's just, you're not on social media and go meet with your friends in person or something. It's like,
yeah,
it's not that serious. I just think there's an addictive quality to it. Honestly, it's a pill and a digital form to me.
Yeah.
And it's much like a great series to watch on Netflix. Painkillers is much about this, just like Dope Sick was on Hulu. The OxyContin opioid addiction is just it's heroin in a pill, right? Masked as, this is pain relief. This is, to me, is being masked as community. But really, it's just crack cocaine on a screen. That's because the drug dealer says, I need you to become a regular customer. So I need to make something that you cannot have this high. All you have to keep coming back to get the high. Isn't that exactly what this is?
It's like, and I also, like, we don't know how to be bored anymore. Like, right. I think about, like, okay, I'm at a coffee shop. I'm waiting for a friend to meet up with me. I'm not just sitting there with my own thoughts. I'm on my phone.
Right. Or in a line. People stand in line. They have to be on their phone. Can't you just stand in the line? Yeah. Jeez, man.
Like, talk to someone, you know? Oh, man. I have a TED talk basically to give on lines. I feel like
right?
The impatience that we have nowadays. It's so funny. Anyway, but I think that, like, we don't know how to be bored anymore. Like, I mean, we might have talked about this last episode. I can't remember. I think even with children, with preteens with college students, like it's being shoved down their throats of like, how many extracurriculars can you do? Yeah. You know, I think we did talk about this last episode, so I won't dive into it too much, but I do think that that's also a part of this. It's like, we just don't know how to sit still at all anymore. And it's so uncomfortable to the point where people are like, oh my God, I need a hit. You know, I need a hit on my drug.
Let me take out my pill on a, you know, when I go to the airport and I go literally, when I go to the airport and I ride like the tram under the tunnel and stuff, everybody's on their phone. It's like a 2-minute ride. And like, it's just this, everybody's getting their hit, their fix. How is that any different? Okay, one, you know, you just, well, one's just ruining people's lives. You know, they're out on the streets and stuff. Okay, this is maybe more insidious because it's not so obvious, but mm-hmm. it's still ruining a lot of people. And my thing is, a lot of people, I've just in my own observational data, I haven't met one person who's like, I just love this stuff. It's so good for me. Who says that anymore?
No one.
No one.
No one.
But we're still using like addicts. So I'm just kind of like, okay, what's the breaking point? Or let me ask you this. What will be the breaking? Will there ever be a breaking point for this?
God damn it. What a good question. The scary thing is I don't know. Because I mean, even there was a moment where I was like, oh, if we hit it with TikTok and, you know, the whole like stealing your data and mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff and people feeling like it was a violation, but that didn't do diddly squat. No. Like that is still the most popular app on the market. So what is going to be the breaking point? You know what? I don't have an answer to that because either it's so horrible that my brain cannot think of it mm-hmm. or I don't see an option that is available right now that would do it.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know either, but I think that more people are awake to the idea through a lot of the data that, and just their own feelings that this isn't great for me. But the disconnect is there's not a disconnect happening in general. It's like, well, I'm still going to do this, even though I hate it. I mean, it's just like saying, I hate my ex, but I'm still going to see him. It's like,
we all know those people. Right? Exist. Like,
wait a minute. You shouldn't be with that person. Well, you know, I mean, it is toxic, you know, but still I can't help it. It's like,
that's a great way of putting it.
Really, this is like literally what it is. And I'm like, why can't we get ourselves off of this? Because people actually do have a lot of power. When you know, corporations, we feel like corporations have all this power, but listen, you're the product. If you stop buying stuff, the corporation will kneel to you because they're just doing what you want to do. Well, your effort, your consumerism is driving these profits or whatever it is. The companies are getting bigger because of us.
Yeah.
So if we stop our this behavior and we cut down, it's going to make a massive change. You think the companies are going to change? None of these companies are going to be like, you know, we should do less. This stuff's bad for people.
Yeah, this stuff's making us billions of dollars a year. Let's stop doing that.
Let's do less of that. That seems like a good idea.
I will say, like, I'm loving that there are more and more apps available that are going, that it's funny. It's apps that cut you off from apps, which is the irony is not lost on me in that. But like, for instance, iPhones have a, I don't know about any other phones. That's just because I don't have it. But iPhones have a built-in system where you can limit your screen time and limit the time you spend on apps. So after 30 minutes a day, my Instagram goes dark. It's like, hey, you're done. No more. Yep. Now here's the kicker though. You can be like just 5 more minutes or just 10 more minutes or whatever it is. And after a while, those buttons just be, you know, it's so easy to just hit those. So, but there is a new one. I'm totally forgetting the name that doesn't have that option where it's just like, it's locked. You're done. And I love that more stuff like that is coming out.
I'd like to, I think it'd be good for the viewers and listeners to know what that would be. That would be interesting to have. We could put it in the show notes or something.
I was going to say, I'll find it after this and I'll send it over to you.
I think it'd be really good. It's just, this is, you know, all this stuff, whether it's perfectionism or, you know, connecting to each other, they're all behavioral things. It's about being a human being. And I like to really play in the area of like, what's the sticking point in these areas? Like, why do we say we hate something, but then we still contribute to it? Why do we see a terrible tragedy happening and then laugh at it? If it seems like, you know, it's just this weird stuff about people And I just think social media is the great 2000s experiment on humans in relation to, let's see what we can do to these fools. You know, and like,
we're not winning.
We spend a lot of money on behavioral psychology and understanding nudging technology and how to keep you glued to these things. You know, listen,
yeah,
it's not like I'm perfect about it. I don't really have social media, but I do like YouTube. But, mm-hmm. you know, my thing is like, oh, I'd rather just, if I'm going to use some of this stuff, I'm going to use Zoom or whatever, and I'm going to talk to people. I'm going to use the technology to further connection, not further my doom scrolling. You know, yeah. like, I just, how can we better get people to align? I don't like this, but I'm doing it. Okay, well, how can this come together that actually makes sense? Because you're just lying to yourself at this point. You know?
Yeah. I think the reason we're so like, yeah, I hate this. It's not good for me, but I'm going to do it anyway. It's twofold. One, I think it's the comfort zone. It's the easy thing to do. We know how to do it over and over and over again. It's that basal ganglia taking over our habits. Yeah. The second reason is a lot of us don't know what to replace it with, or at least it's not a clear idea of what we want to replace it with. So let me get on my little neurological high horse for a second. But, you know, our brain is always going to go to the clear and the comfortable. So if we make, I won't say always to the comfortable, but it will lean towards comfort over uncomfortability any day. So if we have clear and comfortable as social media doom scrolling, it's going to keep going to that no matter what, because that's just how our brain is programmed. But if instead you're like, okay, you know what? I'm not going to scroll. And instead I'm going to do this extremely specific thing. I'm going to empty the dishwasher. I'm going to read 10 pages of a book. I'm going to call up that friend who I haven't spoken to in a year, whatever it is. And that's what we say we're going to do. But so many of us are like, oh, well, I'll clean my house. That's not specific enough.
Yeah.
I should go after my goals. I should have a morning routine. I should da-da-da-da-da-da. It's also attached to the word should, which already our brain is like, that's not fun. Let's do the thing that's easier, you know? So I think that's also the big, big, big reason is like, we're not replacing it with anything that's clear or that we know what to do instead.
Mm.
So I'm leaning towards that is my, I'm not going to say that's a cure-all answer, but I'm going to say that's a large part of it.
I got to tell you, I never heard that before.
Really?
I've been doing this a lot for a long time. I've never heard that before.
I did a little hair.
I have to chew on that. I really have to chew on that because like, yeah, it's like, what do you replace the habit with? And I got to really think about that.
Yeah. That's a very James Clear way of thinking. Yeah. He wrote Atomic Habits. So he always says, make it, it's four things that I'm totally forgetting. I know fun, obvious, easy, and I'm forgetting the fourth one. But anytime you're rewriting a habit, you have to make it like in your face, easy to follow through on, and some kind of enjoyable result for yourself, or else you won't keep doing it.
Yeah. I mean, this is the, this is literally the problem with exercise for people.
Absolutely.
This is literally the crux of why we struggle so much to get people to take care of themselves and a variety of things. It's like, you know, because it's counterintuitive to literally all of that. It's like, oh, let's make this easy. Well, you know, if you want to improve, it's not that easy. It's like, well, let's make it enjoyable. It's not always enjoyable. You know, like it's so many things that are worthwhile are difficult. And I feel like sometimes we're trying to rewire our existence to get that out of us. It's like, why does it have to be hard? Why does this have to be hard? Why can't we just make everything easy? That's a dangerous place to be moving towards, I feel.
Yep. I had a person on my podcast recently who said, I hate using the word easy. She actually used the phrase, it's a trigger word for me, because she's a financial expert. And she was like, making money's not, you know, learning the money game's not easy, but I can figure out how to do it with ease and like discuss the difference between that. Because I agree completely that there's so much, I think it's also, maybe this is just the niche that I'm on Instagram. It's like, oh, like I made 6 figures with ease. I made a 7-figure company with ease, easily. And then when that doesn't happen for you, you're like, I'm doing something wrong. I'm a failure. I'm not good enough. Ba-da-da-ba-da. What am I doing that they're whatever. And it just becomes this immediate mental beatdown. Whereas that person's not explaining the, you know, 10 years that they've been in business for, the 5 employees that they have, the 100-hour work weeks that they worked, whatever their, you know, thing was. And we're not seeing that. And I think that it's important to remember that nothing in life that's worth, like, you know, the like going after, there's blood, sweat, and tears. Like,
yeah,
there's always going to be blood, sweat, and tears, but you don't, I do want to say, I think a lot of people are making it way more miserable for themselves by trying to quote unquote do it all, by trying to, you know, be on all the platforms and like all of this stuff rather than like 80-20-ing it and just like really leaning into what's the 20% of tasks that I can do that will give me 80% of the outcome that I want.
Yeah.
Just, that's a whole other podcast.
This is really throwing me for a loop. This other thing too is like, and you just mentioned making stuff with ease. How do you even know that person's telling you the truth that they're making that type of money? Like you could be totally into someone online and they're saying they're doing this. There's a good percentage they could be lying about that. Mm-hmm. So then there's a discussion about, are you following someone that's actually telling you the truth about how to get to somewhere? Maybe they're just lying to you. Yeah. I know that sounds somewhat conspiratorial, but it's not like it is, because there, how many times we've learned that these people are not who they say they are for that. So then that's a whole nother can of worms. It's like, well, what's the authenticity of the person? Because a lot of people make themselves out to be this much different person than they actually are through their avatar of online life. And
well, I think that goes back to the whole like, I'm doing this for my ego to get ahead mm-hmm. versus I'm doing this for the greater good. Because I unfortunately know a lot of people like that. And like on the apps facing the audience, they're like, oh my God, life's so amazing. Da, 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 da. And then I'll get on a call with them and they're like in tears because they're so fucking miserable.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I think, have you heard of the like, don't talk about it until you're out of the weeds trait that a lot of people are adapting. Mm-hmm. A lot of people in the personal development world are saying like, I can't talk about my problems unless I know how to fix them, unless I'm out of it and looking backwards. And I'm just like, well, whoopty fucking doodle for you. Like, I don't know if I'm ever going to be at that place.
What was that?
Because I'm always going to have a new level, new devil. I'm always going to be figuring out something like, you know, and I've been very open with people about like, I just started therapy about 4 months ago, months ago. Sounds about right. Like it's not been easy. I have had many sessions at this desk where I just have a mountain of tissues next to me. And just, like that's just part of the healing journey. But like, why on earth would I not, I mean, I'm not going to share details because I do need to have some kind of line between, you know, my personal life, but like, why would I not share that? Like, hey, like you're not alone going through this shit. Like I've been studying this stuff for 5 years and I still go through it. And I'm sure it's going to be the same thing when I'm at 20 years.
Yeah.
But, and that really just full circling it, that goes back to, in my opinion, the imperfect success of it.
Yeah.
I want to know the imperfect side of someone's overnight success story because it's never overnight success.
No, never.
Yeah.
It's always a much longer process than what you're seeing. She should like be sharing that with people. If you're going to share anything, share that. Now, some people I think go overboard and they just share just all bad stuff. It's like, okay, life's not amazing all the time. And it sure isn't terrible. Like every second. And it's like, now you're not, you just can't be a victim all the time. You know, stuff. It's like, I just think we're finding ourselves in a very precarious time where we're just like the bullshit meter is like really weird for some people, actually a lot of people. So they just don't see the BS coming for them. And I'm like you, like as soon as I step to someone and they start telling me stuff, I'm like, okay, this is nutty. I'm just like,
I'm like so out of that conversation.
Right. Right. Can't you tell? Like as soon as somebody starts telling you stuff, I'm like, ah, this sounds really nutsy. I mean, like this person said it straight for a cult. You know, it's coming. And it's like, you had the signs of cultism, like strong. The force of cult is strong in this person. Like, you know what I'm saying? You know, like people are like, they have, you know, the people who, you know, it's like there, if there's a scale, that scale is really high. Like they could be in a cult tomorrow. Oh, yeah. It's so true. Like, I'm serious.
So funny. Oh my God.
You see it in them quickly. You're like, ooh, man, watch out. You could be in one very quickly. Like you just
so you're like, I'm glad you don't know where I live. Like, yeah, I'm glad.
So they start saying certain things, you know, there's always like the catchphrases, the words, they're out to get me. You know, I don't believe anything. And it's just like, okay, you're in a trailer running up a hill on Yellowstone. It's about to happen, man. You know, it's some guy in a robe's coming for you real quickly, man. It's happening soon.
I was just talking with someone else this morning about the difference between hope and complacency. And I think that a lot of us have this idea that, you know, like in this scenario where it's like the world is out to get me. Yeah. I'm set up to fail in this financial system. I see that all the time in people in, you know, like our generation, like they are constantly saying, I'm never going to be able to afford so on and so forth or whatever. And that to me brings up the topic of like learned helplessness. It's like, fucking do something about it. If you're this angry, complaining about it on social media isn't going to do anything. First and foremost, do you need to solve it overnight? No, because you're going to set up to yourself to fail if you have that expectation. But you need to start taking little simple steps to getting yourself out of that, because some people are doing it, so why can't you too? Now I do understand that, like, I am a privileged seat right now. Like, I grew up in a family that very much preached this mindset. We were never on the street by any means. Like, we definitely didn't have, you know, financial ease, but like, we were, you know, I always had clothes on my back. Like, I am in a very privileged position to say this. And I do believe that there are some people who say, well, going back to, well, I'm an Enneagram 4, so that's just how my life looks. Like,
that's how it is.
And just like laying down and letting the world kick them. And it's like, get up, you can do this.
Yeah. And there's realities. Listen, it is harder to buy a home when you're younger now. And there are certain financial realities and different things. No doubt about it. But it becomes shaky when like everyone's out to get you. I mean, it's like, are you serious?
That's the stories. Like, you're telling yourself at that
telling
point.
Telling weird stuff out. I'm just saying, all of a sudden the ground underneath you is getting real shaky, you know? And you could be in a cult next week. I'm telling you. It's like,
that's when, like, I look at those types of people and I'm like, you know what? Like, there are people, I will never go up to someone and be like, you need therapy, like flat out. I would never say that to a person. However, there are those types of people who are in that learned helplessness who I don't think realize how effing negative or effing like, again, laying down and letting the world kick them, how much of the pattern they're in. So I'm like, find someone who can call you out on this pattern that is completely invisible to you, please.
Yes. And I mean, think like you can be involved in something and two things can exist at once. You can both love the thing you're doing and feel passionate about it and also be very critical of the thing you're in and be passionate about that. And I think we're losing steam on that. I feel like it's like, hey, you know, I'm into this thing, but there's a lot of flaws with it. And I think where it becomes like really starts sliding down a hill hard is like where the thing you're in is like nothing's wrong. There could be nothing critically wrong with the thing I'm in. Never, ever. Like, that's when you're going to be joining that organization very soon. I'm telling you. I see it. I'm telling you. We started talking about BS meter. I'm like, I'm totally about this conversation because I feel like I talked to my wife about this. I'm like, it's like, you see it coming, but not everybody sees that coming. Yeah, they just go, oh, sounds good. No thought process about it. Like, maybe this isn't great. It's like, okay. I mean, if it isn't, I mean,
I just retweet. Like, I think that's just very, very prevalent right now. And again, going back to the whole social media thing, I don't see that going. I don't know how that would get, quote unquote, fixed anytime soon.
I think you're right, probably. Just because even if you try to create more guardrails around it, then you have a large section of people who go, you're censoring me. You're censoring me. Like, you're not allowing me to say the wildest shit I want to say. And then if you allow like anything to go, then it's like, well, there's too much bad stuff going on here. It's like, where do you where's the parameters? If people can't agree on parameters, then you just have an agreed upon chaos.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of where we're at, an agreed upon chaos. It's like, well, we know it's crazy, so we're all agreeing this is crazy.
Yeah.
Let's just go with the crazy.
But we're not doing anything about
right.
it. I won't say that. There's a lot of people doing stuff about it, but the majority who are being loud about it being work against them and da-da-da-da-da are just, I mean, I see so many videos on like Instagram or, you know, other social media platforms like that, that are just bitching and complaining about the state of the world, how, you know, I'm so sad and I can't do anything about it. And just like very hopeless, like just this very like hopeless attitude. And I'm just like, I have to block that out, because the second you start consuming that kind of content, you become what you consume, right? Like your brain will start adapting to view the world through those, through those goggles. And I just think that that can be so detrimental so quickly that people don't even realize they're falling into this hole of like, oh my God, everything sucks. And I'm sad about it. Like I was just having a conversation with a client, a few weeks ago, where she was like really angry and upset about the industry she was in, like really just going off on it. Yeah. I told her to pause for a second. I was like, okay, like you've made your point very clear. Awesome. Thank you. Great. I can tell you're really heated up about this. What do you want to do about it? And she literally froze. She was like, I never thought about that. And I'm like, tell me about the people you hang out with in your industry. And she was like, I asked, what are their lines of thinking? All the same. They all are so angry and so loud about it. She's like, oh my God, like no wonder I'm in this position. I was like, great. What do you want to do about it? And that's when we started getting creative about new ways of thinking, new ways of approaching, you know, ways of her going about, she's an actress. So ways of her going about auditions, like that right there was the magic question that she had not even pondered. And I don't think a lot of people are pondering.
Well, yeah, of course not. It's like there's a lot of automatic consumption. And I also think this brings up another thing, is like, it's good to know how other people live. But I think we always cross the line where we want to know too much about how other people live. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you start comparing yourself to how other people are living. You're constantly scrolling about what other people are doing. You're not actually living your own life for that.
Yeah.
It's like, so you can't spend so much time seeing how other people live. I know that sounds weird because you want to be exposed to other things going on in the world, but there's a line. It's one thing to see how other people live, go visit another country, go and do some tours, visit things. I feel like that's very positive. But if you're in this like free fall in whatever it is, YouTube, Facebook, and I mean, you're just like constantly being inundated, that's not healthy.
Yeah. So like everyone on another client of mine, she was saying like, everyone on my Instagram is going to Italy right now. And I just don't understand. And I feel like I'm doing something wrong and I'm not traveling. Da, 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 da. And it's like everyone, in my opinion, also on my Instagram, everyone's going to fucking Italy right now. Yeah. I'm going to Italy next year. So I can't really complain about it too much, but that's on my honeymoon. But, one of the things I started asking her is like, okay, what's going right in your life right now? Oh, well, you know, I'm starting my family. Like I'm doing all this, like all of this stuff. And I'm like, great. That's the chapter that you're in right now. They're in their travel chapter. Let them be in their fucking travel chapter. Yeah. Let you be in this personal, like family level chapter. You can travel to Italy in your Italy chapter, but you saying, oh, because I'm not in that chapter, that means I'm not enough. Bullshit.
Yeah. That's with the too much time seeing what other people are doing.
Yeah.
That's why I feel like I always saw this. I remember when it came out was like Foursquare or something like that. And you could like
I used to work for them.
Oh my gosh. Are you serious? Wow.
I'm dead serious.
Wow. This
they're
okay,
still
this
around.
Is
they're still
crazy.
Kicking.
And I thought, okay, tell me if I'm crazy here. I just want to, maybe I'm the crazy one, but I remember thinking when it came out, and I remember I was going to the movie theaters and I was like, why are you people checking into the movie theaters to tell people where you're at? I don't want anyone to know where I'm at. I just always thought it was stupid. I was like, why are you telling
people
where
you're at? The irony is I never had the app. I worked for them for 2.5 years and I never had the app.
Isn't that funny though?
Maybe got in a little trouble with my boss, but that's fine. Because I had a very similar feeling. I was like, I don't want to like go somewhere to experience life, for lack of a better word, and then get on my phone. Same thing with like Instagram stories, or, you know, making a TikTok B-roll or whatever it is. Like, I want to go do something and enjoy the fact of being present there.
Yeah.
And I'm sad to say that I think you and I are a bit of unicorns in that way. Mm-hmm. I think people are waking up to it. I do think that that's starting to happen.
I think you're right.
I'm very glad. Yeah. And I will say this, and I don't know if this has like been sociologically tested. When I got into a relationship, that like very fulfilling relationship, not like I was posting to make sure he saw that I was having mm-hmm. fun so we could toxic love it out, whatever. Like a actual, like, I deeply care about you and I see the rest of my life with you relationship. I stopped posting so much. I stopped sharing all that stuff because I was just there with him.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's tested by any means, but I do realize, like, I think that was a big pivot for me, was when I stopped doing it for everyone else and just wanted to be present with the partner that I was with, who's now my husband. But like, I think that was a big turning point. I don't know. That's a thesis question. I don't know if that's something that's actually real, but that was definitely an interesting thing for me.
Yeah, no, it's it's an interesting thing. I think once I was never super into any of that stuff, but like I think having a child, it makes me very cringy when I see people tell me they post all this stuff about their kids and stuff. I'm like, but you know, listen, like there's a consent issue here. Well, this person is going to be an adult one day. Maybe they didn't want you posting all this shit about them without their consent when they were a child. You know, and one thing I love about my daughter's school, I thought this was so great. Went to the orientation and they were like, there'll be no videos in this school without anyone's consent. So if you want to take a video, you're here and you're taking videos, you are not allowed to have videos of anybody in the school unless they give you consent to be in that video for that. I never heard that before. I never heard that before, ever. And I said, this is a great school. This is a good job.
You know? Like, sign her up.
Like, let's just have some parameters. Again, we can't have this agreed upon chaos. Like, let's have some parameters here. And I thought that's fair, right? If somebody goes, oh, I don't mind you videotaping me while I'm looking at myself and saying some random stuff. But there's plenty of people who do not want to be in that. They don't want to be in your video.
Yeah.
They don't want to be videotaped. They don't want to be part of your stupid channel that has, you know, you, and then you're making fun of them in the background and they don't even know you're there. Like, let's have some decency. And I do think that was the first time I ever heard that, Nicole, like someone actually laying down parameters for that. Why can't we do that on a larger scale?
I want to. I love that so much. I think that's so great. I want to. I think that that's so important. Because like, you'll see people, I'm just pulling out a random scenario, like someone at the airport and they're filming someone who's like over in the corner picking their nose or whatever. Yeah. And they're like, hey, look at this stupid idiot. Da, 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 da. And I'm just like, that person might have been up since 2 a.m. Right. They might be tired as shit. And they might have just dug for gold because they didn't think anyone was
digging for gold, baby.
Let them be.
Why do you need to do that? Like,
I don't enjoy that. And I agree with the child stuff. Like my husband and I have mentioned, like, okay, like, you know, when we have kids, like, and our kids are crying or having an emotion or anything like that, we are not going to whip out our phones and film them.
So weird.
So weird. I'm not going to whip out my phone and film my child upset about what is seeming like a stupid thing, but it's very real to them. Like, that's also like, you know, I do think that gets into, I don't want to tell anyone else how to parent because people are very squishy about that now. Like, I don't want to do that. But like, that is a hard and fast rule for me and my partner. And we've had a lot of conversations like that leading up to, you know, someday us having children together. Yeah. But like, that is pretty high on the list of like things never, ever, ever for us to do.
My daughter didn't ask for any consent. She didn't agree for me to put things out about her. I think when she was really little, I had a few pictures of her out way back in the day when I had Facebook. This was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, this isn't right. I shouldn't have done that. Like, she can't consent to this. I don't want her to come back and be like, why'd you put that stuff up about me? Like, I had no clue. Like, I couldn't make that decision. And we just, besides kids, we should do that for other people too. It's like, listen, stop filming me in an airport when I'm having a rough time. You know, it's like, dude's digging for
having
the
a rough
winning,
day.
Winning
Let me
basket,
get this booger.
You're gonna get this massive booger out here, man. I don't need you. This should not make you big on YouTube, me picking my nose. Like, you know,
yes.
Just stuff like that. Man, I tell you what, Nicole, this is actually a lot of magic here between you and I in these conversations. Yeah. I'm serious. This was awesome again. I really appreciate
it. It was fun. So fun. I always love talking to you and just how real and sincere these conversations are. I'm big fan. Big fan.
Thank you so much. Part two here. So again, just let people know how they can connect with you and take it from there.
You got it. I have my own podcast. It's probably available anywhere you're listening to this show right now. It's called Imperfect Success, spelled exactly as you thought it would be. I'm also, like I mentioned a few times on this episode, on Instagram. I'm at Life Coach Baker on there. And you can find out all about who I am, what I do, courses I offer, free things I offer, coaching I offer on lifecoachbaker.com.
Fantastic. Nicole, it's been a pleasure again. Man, so good. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Darian. It was fun.